Hello, everyone. I'm Heidi Love of the Unfiltered Rise podcast, and I share my story because I feel like it's really relevant for people, especially where I live, which is in Utah. I am an ex-Mormon, and I have been for quite some time now, and I grew up as a Mormon my entire life. Like, some points were more in-depth than others, as far as the Mormonism goes, depending on what family surrounded me. But always in the church from birth and even before birth, because my family members were here, Mormon settlers. They came early on both sides of my grandma's family. My grandpa's family, even weirdly enough, and I didn't know this until way later, was in an offshoot branch in Wisconsin that was very strange. So we'll leave that up there. But he was also, unbeknownst to me, kind of a Mormon, unbeknownst to him as well. He became one later in his life. I always was just surrounded with Mormonism. Like, this was my entire life, especially being in Utah now, growing up for a majority of my life in Idaho till I was 12. It's so close to one another that literally you are immersed, even for people that aren't born into the faith. So,
yeah. So it's a whole, it's not just a lifestyle. It's like a family history kind of thing. Your entire ancestors. And maybe you could talk a little bit about how far that goes, like how back in time that goes. But also, it's a good point that you said in Utah it's permeating the culture everywhere. So this is a good introduction to kind of when we're going to dive into your story later, to give context to people as to, like, you know, really where that comes from. But how many generations of Mormons were in your family?
So many. So this goes back to kind of a strange person in history, Henry Stuart Talbot, which is, been named as one of the illegitimate sons of the king, like, over in England. And for some reason, he went to South Africa and he settled like a town there, and for an even more strange reason, became a Mormon and came here. Which is really weird. And my genealogy is even more strange, because of this person that was related to very up people like Marie Antoinette and, the king. Like, today, my genealogy is, he's my eighth great, great grandpa is the king of England. If this is correct, and he is that child, they didn't have DNA back then. So they basically are saying he was that child, an illegitimate child of the king. And so he had an interesting, you know, timeline of his own. He came here with the original Mormons and settled here and never left. He came back into Kaysville, Utah, and he stayed here until he died, even though he was actually called up multiple times to go back because people had died and they needed him in succession. And he said, no, he just stayed here. So I thought that was always strange. We've got this guy that's could have possibly, I would think, have money, but he came here to be a poor farmer. So that was a little funny for me. My grandma was the only one to break tradition and marry a non-Mormon, which is whoa, at the beginnings. There's others down the line, but she was the first. And my grandpa had come here from Chicago, and they actually met when she was like, I think, 12, and she was swinging on a swing, and they just happened to be walking by, and he was like, oh, she's so pretty, which is really cute. And he was from a different area back east, so it was kind of whoa to her, because like I said, if I grew up immersed in Mormonism, I can't imagine what it was for her back in that day and time. And every single person in our family was Mormon. Like, there were no not Mormons. In fact, polygamy caused some issues with that and the settling where cousins were marrying and didn't know that they were kind of close. It was like that bad. So it was good, I think, for genetics that she met him. later on, like I said, doing genealogy work, which I never thought I'd find myself interested in whatsoever. My grandma was like very into that, and so that was her thing. But as I studied, like I said, I found some strange anomalies even with my grandpa on Mormonism. So this has been going on for as far back as Mormonism started. Literally, they were some of the first people. yeah.
That's super interesting that you come from that line. But I want to talk about your parents, actually. So you said your grandma was a Mormon. She married a non-Mormon. What about your parents? What did they believe? What's kind of their history?
So my grandma marrying a non-Mormon sets the stage for some differences with their child rearing. They had four kids by the time she was 18 or 19. Like, they got married at 15. He was 15 and I think she was 13 when they had their first baby. Yeah, it was a different time for sure. And so they had this very young family. And my grandpa, I always used to say my grandma was on a mission and my grandpa was on Mission Impossible because he was not going along with this program. And so these kids grew up a little different and none of them followed the exact succession of every single person in my grandma's family before that. They were all married in the temple. They were all extremely devout. They were this. Well, my grandma didn't get married in the temple. And then she marries a convert and he didn't convert himself for a long time. And she stayed and hoped that he would. She ended up going through the temple as a single woman. And back in the day, that just wasn't a thing. I mean, they still knew she was married, but she had to go by herself. So these kids saw all of this and kind of went their own ways combined with the era that we're in. I was born in 1976. So, you know, we've got hippies. That's why my name is Heidi Love. Like, people think this is a stage name. It's not. It's my real name. I just don't use my last name. That's my middle name. And my parents were very hippies. My dad, however, he was way different. Like, he was very against the grain. He didn't ever want to be a part of a religion. His parents were very, his mother was very like that. His father came from an extremely devout Mormon family, but not the mother. And so he was different than anybody else pretty much that I had in my life, honestly. And my mom was what we call a Jack Mormon. And Jack Mormons mean you believe in it. You want to do the things, but you also like to smoke and drink and, you know, drink coffee or whatever the thing is you want to do that keeps you from achieving that next goal. And she also told me, I never felt like, even though they push it, I mean, they push it from the time you're young to do these things because it's the way you should do things. She said, I never felt like I should go to the temple, which was weird because I grew up in it so heavily. And I thought that was very interesting. So I've got these kind of hippie, wild parents. They didn't last very long, honestly. My dad was a type 1 diabetic, and he was really erratic in his behavior at this point, not controlled whatsoever, and just all over the place in his health and how that would affect her. She's sensitive to this day. Like, things that wouldn't bother me at all bother her. And so I think I'm much more like my father, where, you know, she would take offense. They obviously didn't get along well, and they didn't last, I think maybe right after my first birthday. And so she remarried by the time I was 3. And this one, I think I was even 2.5. And her next husband was grown up in a sort of Jack Mormon family. They weren't overly religious, honestly, and he was interesting in his own self. He was very abusive, and I know that that was how he grew up as well, and that was something that he learned. And back in those days, it was different. I mean, it's never acceptable, but I do think there was a time and place in history where things were different, and it may have been a little more acceptable, unfortunately, but he was not that good to me. They did end up having a son, my brother, and he was better with him. But as far as I was kind of a project for him. I would say that's the best way to describe it.
Okay. So you come from a lineage, like generations of very devout Mormons. And it turns out that actually your mom and your dad are kind of like, they're Jack Mormons. They're not really, they would have like considered themselves Mormons and would have like used the term, but they're not really following the way that they're supposed to, right?
And my real dad probably did not ever consider himself a Mormon, even though I do know at some point he got baptized way late in his life to Mormonism. he even told me then afterward when he started learning more about it, it just wasn't for him. So okay. I don't know what that means for him, but.
So considering that, did you, because I'm not aware of a whole lot about Mormonism. There's not a lot of people that talk about it. Are there any things, because I know, you know, in different religions, the Catholic Church baptizes babies or infants, I should say. Is there anything like that in Mormonism? And did you go through something like that?
Yes. So Mormons do what we call blessing. And usually they try to make it, I mean, you can do it at any time on a fast Sunday, which is the first Sunday of any month where you fast from food, and that money is supposed to, that you would have eaten the food for that day, go to the poor, and they collect that later in the day. So they do a lot of these baptism confirmations and different things on these fast Sundays. They're kind of the important day. And so I did have a blessing. It couldn't be given by my immediate father. It's normally given by a father, but it has to be a high priesthood holder. So I actually don't know who gave mine. I think it was one of my uncles, which would make sense to me because they did a lot of the other kids' down the line. And they give you a blessing and a little prayer. It's usually not too entirely long, unless I guess you get a dad up there that's a little histrionic, who knows. But they all hold the baby, like they bounce it and they go in a circle, and everybody goes in this circle and they all put their hands underneath, like boom, 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 all the way down. And they're all bouncing the baby. It's supposed to help the baby be calm. I don't know that that always works. Usually a lot of times they cry. My mom did tell me I was good, so that's nice. She said I slept. And they give you your name, what you'll be known as, not in life. Yes, that's true, but on the church record. So that is where your name is recorded for the first time as a part of the church, even though you're not truly that until you're baptized, but that's your first, you know, record.
Okay. And that's the actual name that you have that you use in day-to-day life.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Before moving on, I just want you to quickly touch on something, because you said it needs to be like the blessing needs to be given by a high priest holder, something like that. For people who are not familiar with Mormonism, they probably don't understand what that means. Can you quickly define what that is?
Yes. So they have the Aaronic priesthood for young boys starting around 12. And I think they get the second one around 17, 18, right before their mission. And the second one is this high priest, where you become a Melchizedek priesthood holder. And so these are based off biblical things, as far as some of their conditions. Some of them are not, some of them are church conditions, we'll say it that way, but they have to meet a lot of different things. They have like a checklist kind of from each year that they grow. Women do it also. We have something different. It's called young women's. Well, they probably call it something else now, but back when I went through, it was young women's or mutual. And that's also a program for the girls. But for the men, it's very important that they receive this high priesthood, because you can't go to the temple without it at all.
So essentially every like man in Mormonism that follows Mormonism is a high priest holder, right?
If he is temple worthy, yes. Okay. And you can lose your temple worthiness and still remain a high priest, but like you could be in trouble or whatever. Yeah. But it's not a priest like what a Catholic priest is. It's not like that.
That's why I wanted to touch on it. It's very different than, you know, kind of other religions where the high priest has a very specific position in power in the hierarchy. It's like everyone's kind of considered a high priest.
And our high priest, like our clergy, would be a bishop.
Okay.
Like that would lead the church that we're in, basically.
And in terms of your life, your family, definitely a lot of complicated history. So how was life at home when you were a child, when it comes to, you know, things outside of the church?
Yeah, it was tumultuous, but then also it was amazing. Like it was these weird two sides of the coin. And I think it made me very anxious, kind of, because you never knew what tomorrow would bring. They drank quite a bit. They did illicit drugs. I, you know, made them irrational. My mom had a lot of mental health problems at this point because of the beatings from my stepdad. Not only to her, it actually affected her more when he would beat me. And he knew that. and he would use that. He would also do weird things to make it so she couldn't leave, because she would oftentimes try to flee the situation, and that's smart. But also, I think in the panic, we were kind of left there. She also didn't know what to do with my brother, because that's like his son. So she would leave me intentionally sometimes to take care of him, because like he's much younger. And so she didn't want to leave him there, even though he treated him fairly well. But that was uncomfortable for me. It definitely showed. I've never been really well accepted. And I think that goes on to this day, which is kind of funny, in school or whatnot. But I did have some really great neighbors. But this stuff was showing through the cracks, basically all over, that there's this, all these problems at home. And you don't want to talk about it, because you're told, like, what happens in this house stays in this house. That was his favorite thing to say. And you also don't want to be taken away. You know kind of the implications when you're young and you're growing up in a weird way, if you have people around you that are normal, and you're like, oh, this isn't normal. Okay. So you start to formulate like, oh, we shouldn't say this, we shouldn't do that. So at this point, I'm holding a lot in, which isn't great for your development. But I do think it was great for my Christ development, because yes, I had the church, and we'll talk about how, but I knew one thing. I needed God. Because I was in a big mess, and I would cry out to God often, and I didn't even know like what I was really doing on prayer. Like, it was just from the heart. It was just from like, help me, please. And I developed that despite the church, like on my own. And I actually think it kind of saved me. So that was critical, I think.
Yeah. Well, let's go back to the church. Because your parents didn't seem to be much involved in the church, but how was your involvement?
So I had these amazing neighbors, and they've both passed away, but I keep in touch still to this day with some of the kids, and they were very invested as Mormons or LDS. I'm going to call them Mormons often, and I know people get heated at that, but that's what they were called when I grew up. So this is like not a disrespectful thing. This is just because I grew up calling myself a Mormon and other people Mormons. So, if that offends anybody, I'm sorry. But that's just what we were back then. So they would come over and take me to church, or I would go over there and go with them. Oftentimes my brother really didn't go, because he had pretty severe ADHD, and nobody knew really what was going on with him, but they just were like, oh my gosh, that one, maybe not, but she can come. She's well-behaved. My grandma was just so very concerned about me going to church, and this was a way. So she would influence my mom, who would talk to the neighbor, and I liked it. They were my friends. I mean, they had six kids, and two of them, one was slightly older, one was slightly younger. So we were always together anyways. So I almost every Sunday went to church with them. And so.
And I don't know a whole lot about what happens in the church. I know about some of the teachings, obviously, because I've done a little bit of research on it. But I think most people are kind of unaware of what happens inside of the Mormon church, especially people that are not in an environment like that outside of Utah. So what do they teach you at a very young age? What is it like for you to go to church?
So it's very different now than it was when I was young. But when I was young, so it's a 3-hour block back then. I know they've changed the times and everything now. And you would go to First Sacrament meeting, and that is where they would get up. They do church business. They pray. They do the sacrament, which is bread and water with the little, throwaway cups. They pass it around on trays instead of, I know, like Catholics go up to the front. They don't do that. They stay in the pews. And the boys that are getting their earlier priesthoods bring those trays around for you and you pass them down the line. And so we do that. And then they sing hymns. They do different, the baby blessings if it happens to be that time, or confirmations if it has to be that time. Just a lot of almost boring things when you're little. When you're young, you're not really paying attention, and neither do the older men. They all sleep, which is kind of funny. They're up there snoring and you're watching them because they're facing you up on the stage and you're down in the pews. It's kind of funny. But you're there and you know you're supposed to be there, and then you get to go to the better part, which is primary. Primary is fun. You break off into groups and you learn about, you know, whatever the lesson is in the Book of Mormon that day, or they have all these big lesson plans. I've been called as a teacher before as well. And, you know, even for the littlest kids past nursery school, I think it's 3 when they go into like these little classes, and I was a teacher for them. That's very hard because you're trying to teach these lessons and they're all over the place. They're too little, but you're combined at that point, boys and girls. And then you break away again into females and males, and they go off to their priesthood meeting, and we go off to our, you know, if it's primary, you're just splitting off into boys meeting, girls meeting. But later, when it becomes more important for us to learn separate things, I think that's why they condition that early. So,
one thing I've heard from more, well, I'll use Mormons because that's the term that I'm familiar with, is something called, seems to be unique to them, saying like, I bear my testimony. Can you explain what that means when that happens? I'm kind of curious.
Yes. When you bear your testimony, everybody is sitting, and usually they're doing talks or hymns or whatever during the regular meetings. But once a month at the beginning of the month, the first Sunday of the month, you can bear your testimony. They have testimony meeting. And they'll do the little business real quickly, say a prayer, one hymn, and open the meeting for anybody that wants to speak there in the audience to come and share your testimony about the church. And it always starts out the same way. I don't know if they've changed it, but back when I was young, it always started with, I'd like to bear my testimony, and I know this church is true, and I'm thankful. Usually you say for the apostles, whoever they are right then, and everybody always knows the middle initial. I'm not sure why that is. So we just got a new one. It's Dallin H. Oaks. You would say, you know, I'm thankful for the prophet Dallin H. Oaks, and I'm thankful for my family. And then you kind of say whatever other little things you want to say, if you're able to do that on your own. But the little kids, they're kind of conditioned since they're very small, even 3 years old. Like, I challenge anybody to ask a 3-year-old if they know what testimony means, and they probably don't. But they'll get up there and the moms, okay. And then they whisper in their ear and then they repeat it. And it gets you used to going up there and doing this from a very young age. And they tell you whatever you're supposed to say in your ear. And usually the little kids are really cute, and they just say what their mother or father says in their ear, and then they go sit down. And so you're doing this. I mean, as soon as you can talk, you can go up there. So anybody can go up there.
And does it mean anything in terms of, like, cause it seems to be important. I hear about it, a lot of people talk about it. Does it hold any significance? Cause you're talking about 3-year-olds, like, they have no idea what they're doing, but is it just like a cute thing that they go up there, or is there a meaning behind it?
I think as you're a child, it is conditioning you for a future hopeful testimony of the church. That's what it means. When you say you want to bear your testimony and you know the church is true, this is why I know the church is true. And I know the church is true because, you know, and a lot of people's stories are very moving. They're really, really heartfelt, emotional stories. Like, they'll say, because I had cancer and I got better and I prayed and all these good things. Like, it's not nefarious, but I do think as a child starting that early, and even kids that don't want to go up, the parents start to encourage at least once in a great while. And my husband is a very shy person and has said he has vivid memories of not wanting to do this and kind of being pushed along. So,
in terms of the teachings, Mormonism is different than Christianity. With the years, I think they've tried to kind of like insert themselves more into the Christian world, but I know that the way it started, I've heard this quote from, I believe it's from Joseph Smith, and if I'm wrong, you can correct me, but something like, all denominations are abominations, that he started like, all the Christians are false, and this is true Christianity or whatever. So I know that recently that has changed, but anyway, what are the differences in terms, well, maybe not all the differences, but can you kind of tell me an example of something that they would teach you as a child that would be different than what, you know, typical Christians would learn?
Sure. And also, you know, a lot has changed. Like you've said, they used to say the Catholic Church was the horror of Babylon and all kinds of wild stuff. Like, and I didn't even know what that word meant back then. I remember thinking, oh my goodness, what are they talking about? Like, but you just, and I always thought it was weird that they would specifically name churches. And I know they don't do that anymore, but they did. They did back then. And it is the one true and only church on the face of the earth. And they will say that to this day, that if you do not have all of your, you know, blessings and everything, like gone through the temple and all of the stuff, then you're not going to the celestial kingdom. There are exact rules for each kingdom. And they do teach you that in your classes. Like, they will teach you, oh, this is what happens in the terrestrial kingdom, and then the telestial kingdom, and then the celestial kingdom. So there's three. I think that differs pretty big for a lot of other people. We do have outer darkness, which is similar, I would say, closest to purgatory for other people in the Catholic Church. But most of the other churches I ever heard, it was like heaven or hell. I mean, there was not all this, you know, different levels and different things. And they would teach, you know, that God the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost, they're not one person. And they will tell you that to this day. That's a core teaching of their theology, is that there isn't a Trinity. And they would say things like, well, of course, Jesus was talking to his Father. I mean, he's not talking to himself. He's not schizophrenic. Like, they won't say it like that, but they say very, like, specific things to support their side. And I get that, because, I mean, that's any church. So, yeah, that's one specific thing. They also don't do baptisms as a baby. They do the blessing only. No water, none of that. And you do your baptism at 8. They also believe that you are 100% clean, like fully not capable to be repentant of your own sins until you're 8. And so anybody under the age of 8 is completely innocent. And that plays into some things even later in church history, because you can lose your second anointing if you, which we'll talk about later, but if somebody does a sin against somebody that's completely innocent. Okay. So that age is really important to remember, is 7 and under is you're completely innocent. And so 8 and over, you have to prepare and accept all of your sin and repent for it and be responsible even for tithing. Tithing is 10% of your income. So if you got a birthday card and you got $10, you had to start figuring out how much money is this. And to this day, that actually kind of helps me because of tips, but you can figure out tips easier, you know, on percentages, because I literally learned it as a very young kid. But I also remember feeling, I mean, God talks about donations in the Bible, yes, but he also says he doesn't want donations that don't come from your heart. And I remember being like mad about that when I was 9 or 10 and had no idea, like, why are you taking my birthday money? Like, you really need my birthday money? Like, I'm a little kid. You need my $1, you know? But yeah, they teach you that. And chastity. But I think that goes across the board. But I will say this about the difference of chastity is, it is, and I've been told this since I was a very young child, if you make a sexual sin, it is next to murder. And they will tell you that. I don't know if they do that anymore, but that was ingrained in my mind for all the years of my life. So
we've spoken about, you know, how it kind of is as a child. And as a child, regardless of how you're brought up, regardless of kind of belief system, religion you have, you kind of just go along with what your parents say. It's the, you know, normal thing to do. I think all of us do that. So for you personally, when did you start taking Mormonism seriously and start to kind of appropriate that as your own faith?
I think when I was pretty young, with all the turmoil going on, I did take it fairly seriously by the time I got baptized, only because I saw all this chaos around me and I was like, you all are kind of crazy. And my grandma, she was like good, and I wanted to be like her. So I wanted to do everything I could to do that. And I was always trying to be like the best I could. I was trying to do really the things I was supposed to do, read the scriptures and write my journal and follow the commandments and go to all the meetings. And even if it was hard, even if I had to walk sometimes, even if I had to go alone sometimes. Like, this was like a core thing for me, literally, I remember by 9, because I just wanted a different life. I wanted to be like my grandma. I wanted to have less chaos. So I just didn't like all that. It seemed like that was the problem for all these other people. Like, oh, they're not doing what they're supposed to. So this is, because they'll tell you that back in the day. If you don't follow, you know, all the things that we tell you, then you're going to have, you know, all these problems in your life. So you look at that. And I remember even crying, like telling my mom, man, you can't drink coffee anymore. You're going to go to hell. Like, I didn't say hell, but I would be like, it's really bad. You would think hell in your mind, but it was the telestial kingdom. Don't you want to be with your family forever? You've got to clean it up and go to the temple. Like, I even remember saying that to my mom as a little kid. So it was serious for me, but not nearly as serious as when I ended up living with my grandma later. So